This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello, my cat-loving friends. We have all known about poison hotlines, I think, since we were kids. They've been around a while. Did you know there's a pet poison hotline? Did you know if you're concerned, you can call and ask questions about your pets? Because Rita and I didn't, and that surprised us. So we've got Renee Schmidt with us, who is from the Pet Poison Hotline. She is a veterinary toxicologist, and we are really excited to talk to her, especially with the holidays coming. She gets more calls at this time, but we'll tell you all about that after this word from our sponsor.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to 19 Cats and Counting. I am your co-host, Linda Hall, here with the gorgeous, my BFF, my ride or die, the blonde bombshell, Rita Reimers.
Oh, that's a little too thick, Miss Linda, but I'll try to
pour it on a little more.
I'm
going to run out of adjectives soon, but I'm trying.
I know, soon the truth will come out, right?
Yeah.
How she really feels. But let's go talk with Renee before we start talking about that.
Renee, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, we are too.
This is
making sure our cats are safe and healthy is so important. And a lot of people don't realize just how many dangers there are in our household.
Yes. And we talked about ramping up during the holidays. Is that a fact?
Yeah, it sure is. So we see our highest volume of calls are in November and December every year. And that's been very consistent over about the last 20 years that we've been in business.
So you've been around for 20 years and we've not known about you before. I wonder how that's possible.
Yeah, in January, we get to start celebrating our 20th year in business. And so I'm super excited about that. I've been with Pet Poison Helpline for 10 years of it. So half of its life, I would say. And it's just been a really exciting opportunity.
Oh, that's awesome. Can you order like stickers and magnets for your fridge that say Pet Poison Hotline? Because I know when I was a kid, my mom had the one with the ucky green face and the number to call in case.
I remember that. Yeah, you bet. So yeah, ask your veterinarian. If we send those to veterinary clinics, all they have to do is request it and we'll send them their clings. They're not full magnets, they pop on and off so that it sticks on stainless appliances and things like that.
We also have
top 10 toxin cleans. So we have a separate one for cats, our cat lovers, and then we also have a separate one for dogs. So everyone kind of knows what those concerns are because they're a little bit different between the species.
Definitely.
Sure. Would you say cats are more sensitive to poisons and things around our home?
You know, it depends on the toxin, but around the home, a lot of them are, a lot of medications they're more sensitive to. So pain medication like ibuprofen, you think about Advil or Aleve, so naproxen, any of those pain medications. They're certainly more sensitive to certain foods like onions and garlic. But fortunately for cats, they're not sensitive to xylitol. And if you're a dog lover, or if you have dogs in your household, xylitol is a huge toxin that we talk about all the time. And fortunately, cats, they didn't draw the short straw that time.
That's amazing.
And so they do pretty well with that.
Good.
Wow. I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah. I'll tell you one of the things I love about this. So my girlfriend, Cheryl, had an Australian Shepherd. May she rest in peace. She was a wonderful dog. But Christmas time, she had this little bowl of the Christmas foil wrapped Hershey Kisses, red and green and silver and pretty.
Oh, well, I remember this.
And they disappeared. They were sitting in a bowl by the door, and the dog was pooping sparkles in the snow. And it was very festive. But she said she was so concerned, but it was like, you know, it's always like a Sunday at 8 p.m., right?
Right.
So she said, you know, do I go to the emergency vet? So she kind of took in, she is a nurse and has been for a million years and used to teach it. So she's got not so much with the dog, but she's got some knowledge. And she said, I looked at his body weight and the amount. And she said, I aired and I let it go and it was okay. But she was scared. If she could have just called you and said, hey, my dog just ate 10 Hershey's Kisses. Do I need to do something? Her mind would have been at rest at least, and she could have known whether this was worth an emergency visit or not.
Yeah, for sure. So we're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We never close, and we can offer that peace of mind, just as you said, and let them know, do we need to be concerned or do we not need to be concerned? And there's value in that. There's times when the pet parent may call us from the veterinary clinic. And when they get there and we say, gosh, you don't need to be there, go back home. And there's other times when they're at home and we say, now you really need to go there. Here's something to watch for at home with them. And we can really offer that peace of mind. It's really stressful to get an animal out. As a veterinarian, my cats hate going to the clinic.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm with every other pet parent that's out there. And so if we can keep these animals at home and only send them in when they really need to be, there's a really great value to that.
Huge. Yeah. I know that strain of being like, is this worth, not with toxins so far, thank God I'm knocking wood, but you know, with other illnesses and signs of illness that it's like, is this worth an emergency visit? Can I wait till tomorrow? Am I going to make the wrong decision? You know,
can we go back to the chocolate for a second? Is it toxic for cats? Because I've read different things about the chocolate in animals. In fact, I remember growing up, we had a lab, Golden Mix, and we used to, this was in the, you know, 70s, we used to give him chocolate, which we wouldn't do. He even had a squeaky toy that smelled, looked like a Hershey bar and smelled like, you remember that?
My dog had that. It really smelled like chocolate. I used to sniff it all the time.
So let's talk about the truth in chocolate in both dogs and cats, because a lot of our listeners have both dogs and cats.
Yes.
Yeah. So you bring up two really great points. One is, yes, chocolate in cats and dogs, they have the same, what we call toxic dose. So it's just as concerning for cats as it is for dogs. There's different amounts of the toxic substance in different types of chocolate. So if you think about your baker's chocolate, your unsweetened chocolate, semi-sweet chocolate, that is going to have a lot more of the toxic substance, which is called theobromine, than if you were to go to a Hershey Kiss milk chocolate or a white chocolate or something, or a low percentage of dark chocolate. But the other thing that your comment brings up is misinformation and finding that right information. And as technology continues to explode and everybody is on the giving that pet information bandwagon and Google, you know, you can look for anything on Google. We have found so much misinformation on different animal websites that it's really difficult for pet owners to know what do I believe and what do I not believe. And so if you're looking for anything regarding a toxin concern, I would encourage you to look at an Animal Poison Control Center's website, because that's where you're going to get the true, accurate information. Even sometimes we have found things that have been authored by veterinarians aren't correct. And one of those great examples is giving hydrogen peroxide to cats to induce vomiting. We should never give hydrogen peroxide to cats to induce vomiting. It's extremely dangerous to them. They've had fatalities published with that. And so it's something where you can Google and there'll be articles from veterinarians that tell you how to give hydrogen peroxide to your cat to make them vomit. And so we would never make that recommendation. So I would just encourage everybody to, when you're looking at things, find that trusted resource, which is something that we really aim to be, because there's just so much unregulated misinformation that's out there.
Yes.
Agree.
Remember the cannabis article? I wanted to know how we can use, I've been big on how cannabis can be used to help humans and in medical issues. And so I wanted to find out about cats, and I spent hours upon days upon hours.
See how the article
doing this written. Blog.
And then we decided to dig deeper. And what happened? It was wrong.
And then we had Dr. Tim Shuan, who is a veterinarian who has a company with CBD. And we found out that a lot of what I had written was wrong, and I had to completely rewrite the blog.
We have the right information now on our blog.
Now it's right. Yeah, if you go look, it's right now. But yeah, I was mad because I gather, I want at least 10 people to agree on something. And I'm going to look on vet sites. I'm going to look on animal hospital sites. I'm going to look on the vet WebMD situation.
That tells you how much is wrong out there.
I got wrong information.
Yeah. So think about human medicine. If you go to a dermatologist website and they are posting information about orthopedic surgery, that might not be accurate. If you think about it, you want to go to a dermatology website for skin. You want to go to an orthopedic website for bone and for surgery type things. You want to go to where the specialist is. And that's something that we're able to offer. So with toxins, there's a lot of things that when I was in practice, I just didn't have exposure to. And so I would read and hope that my information that I read was correct and write an article or something like that about it. And so pet parents can come to us, come to our website to get that. Yes, this is the right information. ChatGPT, these AI programs that are going out there now, they are confident in their answers, and their answers are not always correct. And we've played with them, and it's dangerous because pet parents don't know the difference. And we know the difference because we're the experts, but they don't. And so it's just something that I would encourage anytime you think your pet may have gotten into something or you're curious if you could have it in your household, go to an Animal Poison Control Center's website. That's where you're going to find the real information.
We will definitely put you as a resource. We'll put
yes,
a link
we
to
will
our,
on our website. Yes, without a doubt. Poinsettias, you know, we were talking about that earlier. Oh, they're toxic. Don't get, And then what did you say about poinsettias?
Not a big deal. So maybe you're going to have some stomach upset. We don't want any of our pets to have vomiting and stomach upset, but we're not going to have to rush them to the veterinarian. It isn't going to be life-threatening to them. So not a big issue. They really get the bad rap. They're the quiet kid in the back of the room that's not trying to cause any trouble, but everyone's picking on him.
Yeah, I think even the ASPCA national website says they're poison. But if you're ever doubtful about
technically they are poisonous, technically, because they cause an adverse reaction to occur. They're just not a big deal.
They're not going
to You're better off not to. If you're in doubt about something, don't put it around your cats or dogs, or don't give it to them. It's the accidental ingestions that we really have to be careful of. We were talking about, before we started recording, lilies, and it's one of the top 10 poisonous substances for cats. Is that true?
Yeah, it's actually the number one. Call that we receive. And so it's the most common call that we receive. And it's been the number one for cats for many years. And I think it's just because they're so readily available. They're accessible to the household. Very common in household cut floral arrangements. Also common outside for landscaping. And so we don't get a break at different times of the year. They can be exposed to it at any time. The one thing to remember about lilies is that there are a lot of plants that have lily in the name, but they're not the what we consider the true lily or the lily that we are concerned with causing kidney failure in cats. That's our big concern, is those lilies that cause kidney failure. Those are going to be your Easter lilies, your stargazers, your orientals, the rose lily, which is so popular right now. Those are true lilies, and we want to avoid any aspect of them in the household. The other thing to remember is that all parts of that plant are toxic. So the pollen, the water that it sits in, the leaves, the petals, every part of that plant is toxic. And so if that pet even just gets into a small amount, we're going to want to be really aggressive, because the potential end result is kidney failure, which is not going to be reversible and is fatal.
That's definitely a vet visit, correct?
So they don't even have to really eat the leaves. If I rub against one of those pistols or whatever they are. I flunked that course. Okay. With all the little stuff on the end of it, and it gets on their
pollen.
We're in trouble, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get pictures from pet parents who will send us pictures of the lily or of the cat. And they'll say, I came home from work and he's just head to toe yellow or head to toe, brown or orange. and they're licking this. They're likely self-grooming, as cats do. And so that's how they're getting exposed that way too.
What does the vet do to counteract that? I know you probably need to make the cat vomit.
Yeah. So if, depending on the timing, we try to get them to vomit. Cats like to vomit when you don't want them to.
And
when
we know.
You don't want them to. We all know our cats.
We know.
And my cat, I can, will leave me something at the most inopportune time. But when I want it to happen, it's not going to. But yes, we do try to induce vomiting in cats with a medically approved medication. And then usually they're going to be on intravenous fluids for a couple of days to help protect those kidneys. And so they're in the hospital for several days. We watch their lab work to make sure that their renal values, their blood work that looks for renal function is staying normal. Most of the time, if this is caught early enough and it's treated aggressively, the vast majority of them have no issues. If they do have issues, it's usually ones where they haven't been treated. The owner didn't notice it, or they thought it was no big deal. And so then they didn't do anything. And then the cat starts vomiting and is lethargic and, you know, having these changes. And then it ends up sometimes being too late to treat.
I've got a 9-to-5 job.
If you have a Lily in the house, you shouldn't, because it doesn't matter if you keep it in a separate room, you're going to be bringing that pollen back and forth.
Yeah, for sure. And so I always recommend to people, if you're going to send flowers to a friend and you know they have a cat, make sure you tell the florist, no lilies. And if you are bringing a plant home, make sure it doesn't have lilies in it. The one comment I will make is then the Peruvian lily, which is often in those fresh cut bouquets. They're a lot smaller. They're in a little bit of a bunch. They look like the big lilies, but they're much smaller in size. Those actually aren't an issue, just causing stomach upset. So it's really important to know what type of lily is in there too.
You know, good point that they don't actually have to like eat it. Or my husband bought me flowers one time, so I put them up high on a shelf because the cats will eat them. And there was a lily in there. And so it dropped some of that yellow pollen on the, I saw it on the shelf and I went, and I cleaned it up and I got it out. I took the lily away. But yeah, I'm like, you know, I don't think there's a safe way to have a lily in your home.
No, because it'll be in the air.
Yeah. We have a no lily household. So we just don't have lilies. And we love lilies. They're beautiful, but we have cats. And so we don't have lilies. And if I ever send flowers to somebody and I know that they have pets or cats in the household, then I ask the florist to ensure that there's no lilies in there.
So what are some of the other top 10 before we take a break? I'd love to talk about some of those other things.
Yeah. So some of the other ones, chocolate. So chocolate's always number one in dogs, but it's number two in cats. Then we have onions. So onions, chives, leeks, shallots, then garlic, followed by garlic. And then we have ibuprofen, vitamin D3 supplements. So a lot of times that's a whole great another topic of conversation, because a lot of us humans think that a supplement, a dietary supplement, is healthy and it's okay and it won't be problematic, but it can be very problematic for cats and for dogs alike. As thinking about other different kinds of medications, so amphetamine combinations. So amphetamines, a lot of mental health medications are out and people are taking them in the households. And for some reason, cats love the taste of them. I always say cats are a little bit more distinctive and discreet and not wanting to eat things. But for some reason, amphetamines must have a scent and a flavor to them that they really, really go to.
Wow. Who'd have thought that?
Yeah. Why is it? I have no idea. I have no idea what it is. But for some reason, cats love the taste of it.
I keep all of my medications in their bottles, security caps, and yada, yada. But I can't tell you how many times I've gone to put one in my hand and it's fallen through.
Yeah.
And then I'm on the floor searching for.
I do that. I have an open drawer and I do it over the open drawer because I've done that smart. So many times. So now if I miss, it hits the drawer. That's just smart. A little read a tip.
Yeah. I always recommend that pet parents take their medication in a closed room where the animals are not there. That way, if something like that does happen and it falls onto the floor, there isn't a cat that could come in or a little dog that can come in and sweep in and take that medication before you found it, keeping them out of reach. I always like to joke that, you know, if you're a dog in a cat multi-pet household and your cat is a born assassin, you know, it's not uncommon for them to they're the ones climbing up on the countertops and, you know, tossing the medications down on the floor for the dog in hopes of getting rid of the dog at some point. So, you know, making sure that all of that's kept in a shut and a closed door, you know, it's a cabinet somewhere where there's no access to it. Even when we don't think they're going to get up there, they might get up there.
Oh, I had a friend who works in cat rescue in LA, and he didn't secure the cap tight enough on his Advil. Cat knocked it on the floor, ate Advil, and by the time he got home, the cat died.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very important.
Yeah. And the most cautious of pet parents, things can happen. We're all human. Things can happen.
Oh yeah.
And so just trying to get into those good habits. My mom, I'm sure, doesn't like it when I tell the story, but I tell her, I tell it anyways. She used to keep our dog's medication and her medication right next to each other. And so when I was younger, I think I was in college at the time, she mixed the medications.
Oh, boy.
And so that's a call that we get. That's something that happens. You know, again, humans are human, and it happens sometimes. So just
exactly
doing all these different things that we can do to keep it away, to keep them separated.
Cats are our lives. I make mistakes all the time.
My cat's meds have their own separate drawer, way apart from mine.
Yeah.
We should probably take a break here for our awesome sponsor. And we'll be right back to talk more with Renee Schmidt about how to keep our cats safe, especially with these holidays coming up.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting and my awesome co-host and BFF Linda Hall. And Renee Schmidt is talking to us about the Poison Control Hotline just for animals. Who knew? So, Renee, we just finished talking about the top 10. Linda has a question. Go ahead, Linda.
I was going to ask Dr. Renee, what is a common thing that you're just like, I wish everyone would just understand this and stop doing it?
Well, I think one of them for sure is the plants in the house, knowing which ones are what they should avoid in their pets. And then the other one is leaving that medication out, like we kind of alluded to before the break, and just thinking about when you have visitors come over. A lot of them might not be aware, or they're not coming from pets in their household. And so they don't think about it. Whenever I go travel, I set my suitcase on the floor and open that up. And if you have a baggie of medication, most of us don't want to take all of our different pill vials. We throw them in a bag and there they go. And so encouraging people, if you're going to have house guests and stay at your house, ask them when they come in. Do you have any medications here? Let's put this, I've set this place aside for you up in the cabinet. And to do that, and to just have everybody not have that potential exposure. This is the time of year where we have a really high volume of calls from that exact thing happening where the animal got into someone's bag, a visiting person's bag or medication, that, and then that person doesn't have the medication bottle with them. So they're not exactly sure. I think I remember the name. I don't remember the strength. I don't remember these things.
That's it. I can tell you all my names, but when they ask me how many I use or whatever, I'm like, I haven't got a clue.
I wouldn't know either.
Doctor says.
I wouldn't know either. So all of those things can be really helpful to kind of keep away. The other thing that I would encourage people not to do is to, if you use a rodenticide or some type of insecticide or bait product in your house, either save the package or take a picture of the front and back of the package so that if your pet gets into it, we can find out what it actually is. and not just assume. Unfortunately, a green block of bait doesn't tell us anything. It doesn't tell us what that ingredient is. And there's a lot of different ingredients when we think about rat and mouse baits. I always say that the best mouse bait is a cat, right? To get in those. But sometimes they're in certain situations where we have different things like that around. And then we kind of run into problems when that packaging is thrown away.
Yeah, I won't let my people that exterminate, that they spray outside quarterly, I won't let them come inside and do anything. Outside only. I won't use anything like that. They wanted me to put, I had a little mouse problem because they mowed down next door to build a house. They wanted me to put one of those little bait things in the house. And I said, no, I won't do it. I'd rather have a mouse in the house than a cat get sick or die.
Yeah,
another thing too, sure. I was thinking, people, you know, when you have dinner like Thanksgiving and people want to feed your cat or dog something from the table, you really need to caution them against that because they don't know what's poison and what's not, maybe, unless they're a pet owner.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting back to that onions and garlic that is in one of our top 10s for cats, cats are extremely sensitive to onions and garlic. And what ends up happening is there's a toxic component in them that causes a destruction of the red blood cells. And we need that to survive. And so it can be potentially fatal to these guys. And when we think about cooking items and cooking, especially some of our Thanksgiving feast meals and side dishes, maybe using garlic powder or onion powder, or maybe minced and dried dehydrated onions and garlic, if you think about that, it's really concentrated. And so just a small amount can be quite problematic in the cat. One, because the cats are small. They're more sensitive to it, and they might, you know, it's tasty to them, and so they're ingesting that.
Good just point. Getting it on their fur, right? I mean, that's always one of the concerns I have about indoor outdoor cats. So my neighbor is, you know, the big green lush lawn guy that's got to keep his lawn just so. He sprays chemicals on it. If your cat rolls around in it and then grooms themselves, right? They don't have to ingest it. Although we know cats eat grass too, so I guess that would be a concern either way, but.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it turns into a skin exposure, which depending on the product could be problematic, but then it also turns into an ingestion because they are grooming themselves and swallowing and licking that. You can
I don't wear shoes in the house because of that. I don't want
to. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I know that there are people out there, my cat never eats the plants and my cat never. You can never say that. I mean, we have.
You don't know unless you're following them around 24/7. You don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember when we were doing the pet sitting business. We had a client call and have to cancel her reservation and her very expensive trip at the last minute because the beloved toy that the cat has never destroyed in like the 10 years he's loved it, he finally decided to destroy and ate the squeaker inside of it.
What about the one that ate part of the water fountain?
Yeah, that was a good one. 3-day hospital stay, lots of money, and could have died because it ingested part of its water fountain. Yeah. They don't until they do. Until they're just in a mood or they're bored and they don't have anything new to do. And they're like, let me investigate this closer, right?
Yeah. We have our youngest cat. I call her the toxicology stunt cat because she will put anything in her mouth.
Oh,
and
no.
So I use that to my work advantage. So when we need some pictures of an animal getting into some chocolate or getting into something, we can
pose her.
She's never gotten to something that's been dangerous, but she's willing and able. And our dog, she's more obedient, I guess I would say. And you can't get her to. She's like, no. I know that you won't let me do that. So
that's
I'm not
the difference between training a dog and teaching a cat. Notice I said teaching a cat. You can't train a cat.
No,
exactly. You just can't do it.
I think from the behavior aspect, cats are both predator and prey in nature. They have to check everything out. There could be a predator. There could be a prey. They have to. So when you bring something new in, it must be invested.
Then why won't they take their medicine, Linda? They'll eat my medicine. But
I wish.
Sure.
Put your name on the bottle.
That's a good idea.
Do it.
I wonder if that would work.
What else do we need to be careful with, Renee?
Let's see here. I think we've talked about kind of like rat baits and rodent baits, cleaning products. Cleaning products is a big one around the house. You want to make sure that we have our dishwasher, the detergents, our laundry detergent, any type of cleaning chemicals. depending on the active ingredients, cats can be more sensitive to some of those than others. And so something that we want to make sure, again, keep it behind the door, keep it behind it, a door that they can't open. We don't want to have it on the lower cabinet's door. So obviously a higher cabinet would be ideal, especially if that cat can open that. We don't want them biting into those laundry pods or those dishwasher pods or anything like that. That can cause some pretty significant mouth pain and even ulcerations, and can be pretty damaging to them if that happens.
Linda had to put baby locks on her cabinets.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. Was, you know, one day my kismet was just in the mood to, you know, every once in a while, they just want to isolate. And I opened the covered door where the plates are, which is high up. And there's a cat laying on my dinner plates. So, you know, I had to put baby locks on everything. Now it's a pain in the butt for me to try to get the dishes. But, you know, it is what it is. They'll find a reason to do what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say childproof your house if you own a pet. It's, you have to
100%.
Toddler-proof your house if you own a pet, and just think about all of those things that they could potentially get into. And if your cat's a climber and a jumper, then you have to go up to the upper levels to get all of those things under control or safe.
Yes, I've definitely done more cat-proofing for my cats than I ever did for the baby-proofing for my children, because they couldn't get up to that high up. But
yeah, for sure.
What's really been discouraging for us is finding products that are pet products that are aimed at pets. So we took the time and did some deep dives on some stuff. We found out that
we want to name names
all
here.
The ingredients. So then we do, I didn't care. You know, the first thing I did, Nature's Miracle Calming Spray. It said preservatives. It took me a long time to find out what the
not
preservatives
natural
were.
And not,
not a miracle. Then I did a search on the web for this item and this item and this item, which are all really long, ridiculous. And found out that all three of the preservatives they use are not allowed in human products because they're a moderate risk of organ toxicity.
See, why do they hide it like that? You know, they don't even put it. It just says what? Like cleaning products.
Cleaning surfactants. Cleaning agents. Preservatives.
You've got to do your homework.
How in the world, without playing detective and spending hours per product, do we find what's safe and what's not?
Yeah, it can be very, very challenging. And so depending on the type of product and what regulations are accompanying that product, they can list what they will call a proprietary blend, or they may list the ingredients but not the amounts for proprietary reasons, meaning it's a company secret. And a lot of the human poison control centers or the animal poison control centers will have, you know, Pet Poison Helpline. We have a database where some companies will share that information with us so that we have that, knowing that.
Okay, I got to get a job there.
Agreeing confidentiality that we won't share that with, you know, with the general public. And so sometimes that's a good way to look at those specific products.
But shouldn't it be shared with the public though, Renee? What do you think about that?
You know, that's not my job.
I know. And you have to watch your mind.
It's great. Consumers understanding things is really great. I'm not in the manufacturing business. I get that there's things that they don't want other companies to come and make a knockoff product that's the same of it. So I definitely, you know, I respect their decisions with that, but it just makes our job a little bit more challenging for sure.
Yeah. Some of the things, you know, people don't know. And I went down my rabbit hole, as Rita calls it, where I was just like blinders on, focus.
Yeah. We actually had said at one point we weren't going to like call anyone out. But then when we found out how dangerous some of these products are, yeah, we do. I mean, I know you can't, but we do.
Yeah,
we're waiting for cease and desist letters, but you know,
we're just telling truth, so there's nothing they can do.
Exactly. And I worry there are products out there that have developmental and reproductive toxicities. And, you know, we get some 25-year-old in a session who's using this product, and I'm like, throw it away.
You want to have kids in the future that are normal,
right?
And don't have issues, or, you know, yeah, no.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that brings that up too, and you briefly mentioned it as far as like natural ingredients. And we have to be really careful with natural ingredients as well. And I use a very poor example, but I think it kind of brings it home a little bit more. Snake venom is natural as well. And it's fatal. And so it's something that, even though it says it's all natural or it's homeopathic or it's holistic, depending on the amount, it could be potentially problematic. And there's a famous saying in toxicology, it's that the dose makes the poison. And so everything in it's different amounts, moderate amounts, moderation is kind of the key, but really checking to see if you're wanting to use a product in your household. Essential oils is a great example. Our family loves to use the wallflowers, and that's okay with our cats because we have it in a well-ventilated area. We don't have them in a closed, confined spot. They're not in an X area where they can get to it. And so that's okay. Where it becomes a problem is that if we had poured that into a bowl and they were to ingest it and lick the whole thing, or they were to be closed up maybe in a closet or a bathroom with that on at full volume for all day, and the cat has asthma to begin with, then that's a problem. So I think it's really important to remember that even if it's all natural, even if it isn't all natural, we just have to really think about the situation, the particular patient or the particular pet, and what its intended use is going to be.
I know we're running out of time, but I have to ask about salt lamps.
You know,
good question.
If there's a cat that is really licking the salt lamp a lot and is ingesting a large amount of salt, salt in itself can be a toxic concern. I'm not sure we've had an exposure where a pet has ingested enough to be an issue. It's usually maybe like a couple of licks and then they move on. But if they were like my son who loves salt, and just really, we always tease when we get him a salt block for Christmas because he loves anything with salt on it. But if they were really to go to, you know, kind of go to town with that and constantly be looking at the salt lamp, then I would probably avoid it.
Okay. Awesome. Because, you know, they're natural and I understand that there are a lot of benefits. I just think they're pretty. I love them.
I know. I had one when I lived in LA and then I heard they were bad for the cat, so I got rid of it.
Me too. And I keep thinking I want one again.
Depends on, you know, again, the dose makes the poison. So it depends on how much that cat really is bothering it. And if you have a cat that's going to, then I would avoid it.
I have 17 cats. There's no way I can watch.
Yeah, see, that's what I
live. You probably don't want that in your house.
There's 11 cats in this house. I can't keep track of them or guarantee what they're doing at any given moment in time. Just a free for all around here. So.
Well, I hate to, you know, end this podcast. We could probably do two in a row. But Renee, are there any last bits of wisdom you would like to leave our viewers and listeners with?
One thing that I forgot to mention when we talked about lilies is there is a website called nolilliesforkitties.com.
Ooh,
it talks about, it shows pictures of the dangerous lilies, also gives different, more cat-friendly plants to have in your household. So you don't have to be a completely non-plant household if you have cats. And so I would encourage people to check that out. A Pet Poison Helpline, we did that in collaboration with the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. And so I guess I'd like to just take that opportunity to point that one out too. And then again, just remember, think about your pets as being the toddlers. And so anything that you can do that you would want to avoid having around a crawling baby or a little toddler in the house, think about that when you're thinking about pet proofing your home as well.
Be sure to visit petpoisonhelpline.com and bookmark that website for future use. You never know.
And you may think
you're so careful, and then one day your cat gets a hold of something. Yeah. Be prepared.
855-764-7661 I have is that poison helpline. I'm writing that on a piece of paper, an index card, and it's going on my fridge.
Yes, we definitely need refrigerator stickers and things that on it, for sure.
Sounds great. Yeah, check with your veterinarian. We send groups of them to veterinarians, and so hopefully your veterinarian has that readily available for you.
Awesome. I haven't noticed it at my vet's office. I'll have to check with
them. You're going to have to ask.
If not, we'll have to have you guys send them some.
That would be great. Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Well, thank you so much, Renee, for being with us. We hope you'll come back again.
Absolutely.
Everybody's got to get prepared for those holidays. Linda, for being my co-host and the one that is so outgoing, because that is not me. You want to see some sparkle? That's Miss Linda.
We balance.
And of course, I have to thank Mark Winter for giving us this awesome spot on Pet Life Radio. We will be forever grateful. And just remember, especially as the holidays come up, every day is Catter Day. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. only on PetLifeRadio.com.